And good afternoon once again with Six Pillars to Persia on Resonance 104.4 FM. This morning my guest is artist Maria Kherja. But first we're going to hear a little piece of audio from the Contemporary Iranian Music Event, which happened a couple of weeks ago before the Party Like It's 1998 week, which was last week on Resonance. So this is my interview with rap artist Farinaz Entegam, who can't speak Farsi, so her friend was translating, albeit rather shortly, for us.
Farinaz has come all the way from Holland, and she's rapping in Farsi. So what I want to know is, what are the subjects that Farinaz is rapping about?
She's singing about women rights and feminist in Iran, and because in Iran is no rap female singer, and she's trying to help them.
Okay, and did she write poetry from a very young age? Is it poetry that was first influencing her?
She was 15, 16. Yep.
And what about music, musical instruments? She was singing with a CD today, but other times, does she like to play instruments?
Sazi and play mikoni?
Guitar.
She's supposed to be playing guitar.
Yes.
But now she now play. She stopped.
Okay, and what's it like being an Iranian in Holland?
Community که تو هلند ایرانیه، هلند چجوریه؟
یعنی
تو کامیونیتی هایی که
not community, like how does it feel being an Iranian girl in Holland?
توی هلند
یه خارجی، یه خارجی، بیشتر از خارجی دیده نمیشیم.
Like normal people, but not Hollandy people. It's not the same as people who's living in Amsterdam or other city.
Okay, so it's quite friendly.
Yeah,
friendly. Okay, and so what? Finally, what would she like to see happening to Iran in the next 10 years?
چی دوست داری؟ چه اتفاقی دوست داری تو ایران بیفته بعد از ده سال آینده؟
که ارزش زنها اونقدر دیده بشه که الان مردا رو قبول دارن.
Women rights is same as men rights.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you
we'll have more audio from the Contemporary Iranian Music Event at Camden Underworld later in the show. But for the moment, I have a guest, Maria Kherja, who I'm practicing saying the name. It's very difficult because I think of all the letters in the Arabic and Farsi alphabet, Kh is the hardest for people to master. And your name has two.
Yes, that's right.
It could have been worse, though. You could have been called Khaled if you're a boy.
Yes, well, I could have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Except my appearance doesn't actually say that being Khaled.
Talking of your appearance, for some reason, I thought you were going to be wearing a chador today because I'd seen you in those photos from the piece I love of your work, which is Souvenir, where you're collecting air in the Iranian desert in plastic bags.
Yeah.
And then you brought them to galleries in those plastic bags. And, of course, you were wearing a headscarf there. I had no idea that you didn't wear it here.
Well, there are rules about wearing a headscarf in Iran. So, yeah, that's how you saw me. Yeah. That's why I had to wear a headscarf.
Yes.
So.
But you're totally westernized here, are you?
I don't know if I'm totally westernized here.
Oh, well, that is a terrible term, isn't it?
It's kind of, you know, I kind of move back and forth. And, I've been around for a long time. So I guess culturally I would be made up of different kind of cultures, you know, made up of different perceptions and thinking. So,
yes. Yeah. And so your exhibition that's just opened on Friday, tell us a bit about that, The Anatomy of Fear.
It's actually called The Psychology of Fear.
And oh, sorry.
It's mine. And it's basically, I guess, the reason you've said The Anatomy of Fear is because I'm working on a project, The Anatomy of Ignorance, for the past 5 years. And The Psychology of Fear is a sub project, really, which I've kind of conceived of about last year. And it kind of tries to deal with societies in trauma. And talks about the other and the fear of the other and fear of basically what is unknown and kind of new or not new, necessarily difference, I guess.
Okay, and that's the fear of the other.
Partly it deals with fear of the other, but I'm also kind of looking at fear in terms of a kind of a very interesting kind of human instinct. and the way it's used in kind of for the masses is the way it's used by politicians, by and the way it's perceived by the masses. So this is probably kind of what I'm trying to deal with in the psychology of fear.
Are you doing that this time with photos, film? What have you got in there?
Basically, the exhibition is mostly of sculpture and installation, and I do have a film projection there. Yeah.
Okay, it sounds great, because on Friday when I spoke to you, you were preparing for your Mary Shelley Frankenstein reference opening piece.
Absolutely, yeah. That was Chaos. I did the performance called Chaos. Basically, what I'm doing, I'm kind of layering different kind of text from referring to Mary Shelley. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which I found an interesting parallel with what I'm trying to do in terms of kind of looking at fear. So, yeah, Chaos was kind of layering of different kind of parts of the text from Mary Shelley's book, whom I find really interesting, and also kind of looking at the character Safi within the book. She has a very small part in the book. She's just mentioned, but her kind of background is very interesting in that she's Turkish and she's half Arabian, and the way she's referred to within the book. And in terms of the way Mary Shelley actually frames her as the other. But the way she's actually described is not so much like the other in terms of Frankenstein was the other. Frankenstein's monster was the other. So they're all others. But the way Safi was described was in terms of her nationality, in terms of her religion. So I found her very interesting. So I created the whole character Safi, who took an active role. And I pulled Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster and Safi completely out of the frames that was already kind of constructed by Mary Shelley. So it was a bit of deconstructing the book and the characters.
So what was Safi's role in the book? I haven't read it for a while.
Well, Safi is, her father is a Turkish merchant, and they resided apparently in Paris, and she comes to be with Felix. Felix is another character, is the blind man. If you've seen the movie, there's a character, Felix, who is the son of the blind man, who basically plays the violin in the film, Frankenstein, the kind of original version by James Whale. And Safi is not even mentioned within the film anyway, but within the book, she's this character who kind of escapes her father's kind of condition, what happens to him, and then she runs to Felix. And so she comes, and according to the book and the way she was framed, she's kind of somehow liberated from that Islamic world, somehow kind of liberated from all the kind of constraints within her own society, which would have been a Turkish society. But what the book doesn't actually talk about is all the constraints that we all have moving out of that context of Turkish society, or perhaps the male kind of orientated society, and then kind of moving into this kind of Western context where she's subjected to being a foreigner.
It's very interesting, because with your current exhibition, The Psychology of Fear, and your ongoing project, The Anatomy of Ignorance, there is this dealing with the other. And I think with Mary Shelley's book, there might also be an aspect that we've created the other, and that we fear what we've created, obviously, with Frankenstein.
Monster.
And that's how we create the other, probably through media and through ignorance of other countries.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the whole kind of working with the idea of Frankenstein, kind of Frankenstein's monster. I mean, Frankenstein, for a start, himself was an outsider. And then you've got the monster he creates out of all the different body parts and puts it together, and it becomes this being that kind of recognizes itself, recognizes what he's subjected to, and tries to deal with that. But because of the way he's constructed, which we could draw parallels with media, or kind of the way kind of different realities are constructed. So in that sense, it's kind of a very interesting kind of parallel with the way we construct perception, realities.
Yeah, definitely.
Realities, yeah.
And just for the people that couldn't go to your exhibition or maybe listening abroad, what comes out in the work in the psychology of fear that refers to the other, or to Frankenstein and his monster?
The work is very conceptual, and the setting, I've had the privilege of actually working with the curator, Frederick Pejic, and he's also worked with fear and paranoia. So, conceptual exhibition, but you do have signifiers like I'm using brains and I'm using kind of the body a lot, and making references also to Middle East. For example, the main kind of the very first kind of body that you come in contact with is kind of a creation of a body or of a statue or a person who's sitting, and he's a cross, kind of a Muslim body. He could be a Jewish body. He could be a God knows. I mean, he could be coming from anywhere, but he does have this beard, and he kind of looks like Frankenstein's monster. So he's, yeah, that's one of the pieces of work there, and it's very scientific kind of setting, yeah.
Okay, and with your other work, for example, Souvenir, has anyone ever offered to buy that one?
People have shown a great deal of interest, is being shown in lots of places. Buying it, not yet, but any offers, yeah, that would be very nice.
Buying the Desert Air. And yes. I looked through the list of your other work, and there was one that really interested me, which you say was a long time ago. However, yeah. I can see a lot of similarities between what you're doing now and Souvenir and this one, which was the tent under the church, St. Saviour's, where you had bags of your own breath in there. So please tell us a bit about that. I love that idea.
Okay. Basically, I had a year's residency in St. Saviour's Church, and I was kind of trying to construct this piece of work, which kind of involved myself, the artist, the authenticity of the artist. And also I'm incredibly interested in architecture. So I used the way the architecture of the space, the church, and then built a tent, a Bedouin tent, which responds to the ceiling. And at the same time, it came through a lot of personal experiences when my mother was dying. So it was a traumatic point where I just wanted to breathe air, give life, and have part of myself within a constructed piece of work.
Are you saying that the ceiling of the tent was similar to the ceiling of the church?
Absolutely not. But what it was is there are similar symbolism within architecture. So you're looking at the circle, you're looking at the sky, kind of you have to look up at the tent, and then the tent, the circular of the tent, kind of emphasizes the circle of the dome within the church. So it's kind of there are a lot of kind of squares,
echoes,
So yeah,
and there's also the impermanence of the tent and the solidity of the church.
Absolutely, yeah.
Was that then?
I think that was about 4 years ago. I mean, and kind of lots of things has happened in between. So.
You said a long time ago. I was thinking like a decade.
Well, 4 years ago does seem like a long time ago to me, because it kind of many, many things happened to me during this time. So,
One of which is that your career is really taking off.
Well, yes.
Yeah, it's great.
Could be, yeah.
Could be more and more shows
A lot
coming.
More than that. Yes, absolutely, yeah. There'll be lots of other shows.
Great, so. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that. We're just going to have now a clip from the Contemporary Iranian Music event, and this time I'm talking to one of the parents of the Simorgh performers. I found this a really interesting angle.
Fantastic.
One of the performers in Simorgh. How do you feel about your son doing music?
Well, just basically fine. I think he's been able to find his niche, if I may call it so, within the group and within the Iranian community abroad. So I think he's basically doing what he's supposed to do. Yeah.
So you're not one of those parents that believes he should be a doctor or a lawyer. How do you feel about him being a musician?
No, that's a sort of crime that my parents didn't do in my case. I don't see any reason why he should do it in his case.
Did you become a doctor or a lawyer?
I'm a doctor, but, for all practical... I play music as well.
Yeah.
Right, so actually, in the case of my son, he started playing at the age of 4 to 5. So that has always been like... not a side dish, but actually one of the a la carte menus, you know, along with his studies and later on his further studies, and I encourage him to do it. It's a very sort of nice way of being able to express yourself and maybe ventilate once in a while.
Yeah. And also, he was the only band that referred to Persian instruments, Persian music. Do you think that's important nowadays for young people to look back instead of completely cutting themselves off from their own heritage?
Yeah, actually, you see, these guys, they've got a genre of their own. They've been able, in my opinion, and that's why I'm so interested to follow up their events. They've been able to fuse Iranian music and elements of rock, hip-hop, urban, and rap in a very sort of elaborate way. It's not just, you know, throwing a number of things into a melting pot and coming up with some sort of, what shall I call it, in a crucible and coming up with something new. It's just that I think they're playing everything in its right place. It's going to take a while before, you know, they can really look back and see if they've been on the right track. But they're basically happy about what they're doing. And the nice thing about it is that they've been sticking together for the past 5 and 6 years. You don't see too many of these things today. These days, let's call it. Don't mean to be
critical. Well, I think their band Simorgh is going to do very well.
Yeah, well, I hope that's going to be the case as well. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
There you go, lots of shouting in the background of the Camden Underworld Contemporary Iranian Music Event. It was mostly rap, but there was one band with a lot of Iranian music instruments who had chanting and rap over the top. And interestingly, one of the parents was telling me he didn't want to inflict the kind of expectations that his parents had had on his own children. So lucky them. And the name of that person we were speaking to is Mr. Bahadoran. There you go. Didn't ask for his first name. So what about you now? Seems fitting to ask you how your parents minded or were happy about you going into art. How did that all start?
I can't say they were perfectly happy about that. I kind of did sciences. I was expected to go into becoming a doctor. So, you know, a professional kind of career.
You were kind of like a doctor. I mean, you're into the anatomy and psychology.
Well, yes, there you are. I mean, had they not tried to persuade me so much and kind of try and get me to do it, I might have actually been a doctor, because I am really interested in sciences and in literature and kind of quite a lot of stuff, really. I mean, when I think about it, architecture, literature, science, all of that really interests me.
Well, you'd expect that from an artist, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So did you study medicine at all?
No, I didn't. But I'm very interested.
How did you bypass their huge and overbearing expectations?
By just being the black sheep of the family. So I just kind of escaping their expectation. But I think they did come around to accepting that I've always painted, I've always drawn, they've kind of known I'm, you know, whatever happens, I'm just gonna go into that kind of line of work. But they did try, and they got all my tutors to try, but it didn't quite work. So I've kind of escaped that.
So you did kind of the equivalent of Iranian A-levels in art.
A-levels in art. I actually did my A-level and all-level art here.
Oh, right.
And I did the foundation. Yeah. So I had all my art career actually in Britain. Yeah.
And then you went back to Iran to teach, did you?
Well, I did my BA and I did my MA here, and then once I was finished, then they were saying, "Well, hang on a minute. You've kind of done all the educational stuff you wanted to do. It's time to come back to Iran." And so I did go back to Iran for a couple of years, taught in Al-Zahra University, which is all-women university of arts, partly, and also the Academy of Arts in Tehran. And I really loved being there.
Was it slightly difficult with all the limitations on what you could do and what could be represented in the classroom compared to what you studied here?
Well, yes, it is difficult, but then there are so many different aspects of life and people there, and that kind of overrides all the difficulties that you might have. I basically found it really interesting. It was, for me, I had a brilliant experience in Iran for the 2 years, and I've met very interesting women. We had fantastic kind of discussions around art, philosophy, life, basically. So I can't really complain at all.
So they don't do life drawing or anything like that?
Yes, we did do life drawing. And you know, as you know, kind of we don't have nude models.
No.
But we use other methods. I mean, a lot of women usually kind of, having studied sculpture, I know that kind of making physically very big kind of structures, women deal with it very differently to men. And I think having the kind of restrictions or kind of that are placed within a society, just like the way we dealt with the sculpture, it, or the female body actually deals with construction, it was the same kind of, I guess I could draw a parallel with that with, in Iran, with those kind of the way the female body actually dealt with all this stuff, like having to deal with models and
sexuality and all that's very big when you're working in art. You know, it has to come through for a very honest artist, I suppose. And then how do they get around it? Do they use a lot of symbolism?
You do get around it. Yeah. I mean, this is why.
Is it muted, though?
Is it muted? In some ways, yes, but it becomes really strong in other ways. I think kind of when you have restrictions in one way, you actually try it in so many different ways. You compensate for it. And I think women have come really become very strong in Iran, and their writing is fantastic, very kind of imaginative. So I'm all for that.
Yeah, it was good. And so tell us, please, about the dates for the your current exhibition. And there are some events going on between now and the end, aren't there?
That's right. It starts on, it's actually already started. And I'm trying to find the dates, actually. Okay. It's happening in 198, Contemporary Arts and Learning. And it kind of runs till 15th of August. So please do go to it.
It's very long.
It's a 2 month exhibition, and in the middle of it, we've got panel discussions with Orit Ashery and Keith Piper, and there are film screenings and kind of talk with the artists. So there are lots of things happening. You know, lots of dates that kind of they're doing things.
It's all on the 198 Gallery website.
Yes, it would be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. And tell us a little bit about the Anatomy of Ignorance, which is your ongoing project.
Okay, it kind of started about 4 years ago, and basically I would kind of describe it as it's really looking at curiosity and knowledge and how that affects our kind of perception in everyday life, how we kind of respond to our immediate context and the way we think. So I guess if you're curious and you gather knowledge, then hopefully you can form a much more informed kind of response to your contemporary kind of what is happening around you. And I think that's kind of really very important at the time when lots of things are constructed, including the kind of different realities that are presented to us. It's all about that. It's all about knowledge.
Mm. So does it surface in different galleries and different events, or is it something you're storing up to show finally on one later date?
Well, I hope so. I mean, one of the sub-projects is The Psychology of Fear.
Yeah.
So there will be a trilogy. So I'm hoping that all these will come to a huge body of work, hopefully.
Great. Well, I look forward to seeing it all and coming
very much
to the Psychology of Fear, one of your events at the 198.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Maria.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, so all we've got left for today is to play a piece from the same event we've been playing throughout the show, which is the Contemporary Iranian Music Event. This is my interview with Ali Charmi. But before we go, I'd just like to remind you that you can find out more about the Six Pillars to Persia show. We have a Facebook group, or there's a website, which is http://sixpillarstopersia.wordpress.com. And most of the shows are podcast on the Resonance FM website. And while you're on the Resonance FM website, you might want to sign up to their newsletter, which is the way to find out about all our events way in advance of the regular circulatory email. Thanks very much. That was Ferry Bradley with Six Pillars to Persia. So what did you think of tonight?
Tonight was cool.
Yeah? Why was it cool? I mean, it's unusual.
I guess so. They should have this like more often.
But there's not that many singers and artists out there, are there? It's quite limited.
In London.
Well, I mean, generally, if you look around Europe, how many interesting Persian musicians are out there?
Like, when it comes to Persian rap, there's loads of Persian rap out there, which is pretty good. Like Pohekte. Pohekte is... Prince P here is like a song called Persian Thoughts. That's the first rap I ever heard in Persian.
Okay.
That's 7 years ago. That's Prince P at Royal M. That's... Pohectic, so I don't know, just myspace.com/PrinceP, that's Texas.
Was that quite an important moment for you? Because obviously you're half American.
I'm half Finnish.
Half Finnish, okay, but you got American accent, you must have grown up in America.
No, too much TV.
What?
Too much TV.
Too much TV
and too much rap music.
All right, what I was trying to say is obviously you like rap music, so when you first heard rap music in Persian, how did that feel?
That was great, but like I said, that was 7 years ago, and it's gone far after that, so it's beautiful. And I really love the fact that they're doing it in Tehran now. And it's what I really love is, like, now you start to hear, like, really good quality music out of Tehran. And that's good stuff. It's not just sandy.
What's quality music to you?
Just that it's real. That it's real, it's not fake. I mean, you can hear if something's fake, you know, if something's copying somebody else. So I guess the music has to be real, that's all. I don't even care if you do it for the money, because a lot of people do it for the money. That doesn't mean you're real or not, in my opinion. It's just, if you sell out, then you're not real, or if you just, you know, take somebody else's style and...
And do you like any other Persian music apart from rap?
Rap, man. Listen to some Persian music. 70s soul, 60s soul music. Finnish rap music. Yeah, I mean, I listen to a lot of kind of music. Just depends if I like it or not. I don't really have any music that I hate.
As a young Persian person, well, like with the Persian community, what do you think that is that we have to express? What is it that we share that is coming out in the music?
Coming out in music, I don't know if I'm the right person to answer that.
Well, you're wearing your Zoroastrian necklace here, I see.
It's not
Cyrus the Great, is it?
No, that's like the Immortal Guard. Well, that's the Cyrus's Immortal Guard. That's the special forces of Persia.
So you're obviously quite into the Persian identity. So what do you think's coming out in the music? What do you hear that people are singing about and saying and is important to express?
Well, I guess, I mean, rap music, ever since it became, it always had a lot to do with identity. I mean, where you're from it's always been a really big thing in rap music. If you're black, like, if you're Puerto Rican, if you're Mexican, that's where you're from. That's always been a really, really big thing is rap music. And I think that's always going to be a part of rap music. It's just, you know, representing who you're from. I mean, where you're from and who you are and... Who your people are.
Are you a practicing Muslim?
Not really, no.
I see you're looking at your drink there.
Yeah, it's cranberry juice. Cranberry juice is good for you. Yeah, there's cranberry juice and some other stuff. I still consider myself Muslim, I'm gonna say it, so, you know. Yeah.
Did you ever get exposed to Zoroastrianism?
I've been always interested in it, but it's like, lately what I've been studying about religion is, I don't really... You know, I think the basics of most of religions is the same anyway, and things are good. And it's when you study history of a religion, it's all the same stuff and based on the same stuff, you know? And a lot of things in Christianity is from Zoroastrianism. So I don't think I'm going to accept any new faith. If I say I'm a Muslim, I don't know, like, if I mean that. I still think I believe in God. I don't believe in following any religion, like, blindly at all. Hell no. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.